Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Boy, have we got an interview for you today. All of us at one time or another are going to be talking about ailments. We're going to be talking about our interactions with doctors. We're going to be talking about how we feel as patients. And Dr. Wurzbacher, who is my guest today, has written an absolutely phenomenal book called Your Doctor Said What? Well, this is Exposing the Communication Gap. Dr. Terry Wurzbacher, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Donna. It's great to be here.
I have to tell you, I have shared your book with a number of persons in the medical profession, some of whom are teachers, and I said, this is a book that should be a must-read for every medical student.
Well, thank you for that, because I agree completely.
I'm telling you, I thought, this is just so awesome. Now, I want my audience to know about you. You spent over 30 years as a physician, 29 of them in the United States Navy. You graduated from the University of Vermont and attended the College of Osteopathic Medicine and Surgery in Des Moines, Iowa. And that's where you joined the United States Navy. And you've been board certified in emergency medicine, and you've served in many different assignments throughout your career. You taught combat medicine for 2 years. You have had a lot of experience with disability medicine. You attained the rank of captain prior to retiring in San Antonio, Texas. And I love this. You wanted to wake everyone up, patients and doctors, because you feel that communication has basically disappeared from the patient-doctor relationship. I want to ask you, why did medicine appeal to you as a career?
Well, when I was a child, this will probably turn your readers off, but I really feel that I was touched and I was told I was going to be a doctor. And then once I had that thought, it was that I really did want to help people. You know, you hear people say that all the time, but as a kid, I did. It was intriguing, the body was wonderful, and I thought that I could probably help people. And I believe that mostly through medical school, and it was after medical school that the curtain went up.
You have quotes. I love your sense of humor. Absolutely love it. And I really liked the very first thing in your introduction, which is, be careful about reading health books. You may die of a misprint. That's by Mark Twain. I thought that was priceless.
Well, thank you. I was very lucky to find several quotations that I thought fit perfectly with all my chapters. So.
I agree. A lot of doctors probably would just be uptight with your statements. The doctors don't spend enough time. They go to school, after all, for anywhere from, though it's an ongoing education. You've got 16 years that generally that you put in for various levels of training. And it's very expensive. When they come out, they are novices. They have to do so many things before they become what I would say comfortable in their medical skin. How long did it take you to become comfortable with being a doctor?
Well, first of all, I gotta let you know, it's 12 years is high school, right? Then it's 4 years of college, and then 4 years of medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the time that you're in this little cocoon of school, even though you technically see patients. But to become comfortable, I don't think I've ever become comfortable, and that's probably one of my positive aspects, because once you start to become comfortable, you become complacent and things don't matter so much anymore.
Now, Jay Leno said the New England Journal of Medicine reports that 9 out of 10 doctors agree that 1 out of 10 doctors is an idiot. I mean, you start off with that kind of a quote and somebody say, okay, that took care of all of my opinions. I'm going to close the book. I don't need to go any further.
Well, that's true. We could have saved on printing costs.
how in the world can someone make an evaluation about a doctor without having to, you know, go through such anxieties? I've known good doctors, I have known mediocre doctors, and I've known quacks. And I'm not that old. And I know you could probably expound on a lot of this. What do you think is the biggest shortcoming in the training in medicine?
Communication. And I think that leads to, I mean, there's a definition, different definitions of quacks. So it depends, let's eliminate that. But you have good doctors and you have bad doctors. And a lot of times good doctors are the bad ones because they don't listen or talk to the patient. And people go, well, you know, that's a pat answer. And it isn't, it isn't. The reason that it's important is if I'm not listening to you or I don't ask you the right questions or understand what you're saying because you talk in a different dialect. I'm from New York, in case you couldn't tell that already. And other people that are from the South, they use totally different words. And if I don't take time to learn things from you and ask me as the doctor, ask you for clarification, I'm going to be right down the wrong diagnosis path, and therefore, technically, I'm a bad doctor, and the outcome would be bad. And that's where you've got to kind of educate your doctor, and I think most people can understand this, and I learned an awful lot. One of my best friends is from the South, and she and I can't talk about hardly anything to say anything about medicine. She uses these words that I never even heard of. But fortunately, we have a good enough rapport because we're friends that I can ask for clarification. And that's what you should try to be, is friends of a sort with your physician. And you tell them right up the front, you know, I'm not trained in this that you are. I'm not going to understand. Hey, doc, is it okay if I ask questions? How do you want me to do that? Raise my hand. You know, kind of make a joke of it. But that's what I call setting the ground rules. As soon as the doctor walks in, you say, look, I'm very uncomfortable, I'm nervous, I'm shy, whatever it is. I wrote down everything for you, and we can get to that in a little bit. But could we talk about some ground rules? And once you take the upper hand, you feel more in control, and you can also gauge the doctor's response and get an idea how far you're going to go with this.
I have a friend I was visiting with just this last weekend, and she had gone to see a nutritionist. And the first time she went in to see this nutritionist who was giving her information because she's diabetic, she said, I felt like I was one of these assembly line projects. Mm. And she said it made me mad. The second time I went in, she started giving me the same spiel. And I said, wait a minute. Hey, doc, I'm a patient. You are not going to run me through your spiel. You are not going to treat me like I am a can and you're the can opener and this is all we're going to do. And she said, this is the way it's going to be, doc. You're either going to answer my questions, or I'm going to find somebody else.
And what was the response? Because that's exactly what you should do. I only have one comment about that, but what was the response?
The response was, the doctor just went, I didn't even realize I was doing that. She said, yes, you are.
Thank you.
This is exactly what you are doing. Now, do I have your attention, and are you going to give me attention, and you're going to have to give me more than just 10 minutes? She ended up being with her for almost an hour.
And the only comment that I have about that, and you know, I realize that you're quoting it, but that to me is a little too offensive unless the doctor repeatedly doesn't listen to you. I mean, there's ways that you can get your point across without telling them they're a total dirtbag. I mean, to me, you should wait a few visits and tell them that. But what she did was set her ground rules and stood up for herself, and that's what people need to learn to do. And you know the best way to do that?
What's the way?
Practice. You either have a friend or a spouse, or if nobody has either of those or doesn't feel comfortable, you do it in the mirror. And anybody who's ever had this fear of public speaking, once you got the words out of your mouth, it wasn't so bad, was it?
Correct. That's true.
And they need to focus, if they heard nothing else in our whole interview, is what you said about your friend. That's so phenomenal.
I think that's very true. Now, you like to use Marcus Welby, who is a fictitious character on television for so many years. You love to use him as an example of what a doctor should be. And I can remember actually knowing a doctor when I was a little girl who was a Marcus Welby.
Yes. You said you weren't that old.
I'm not.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I remember the TV show, even though he wasn't my hero back then. I was a Ben Casey type person, but everything that he did has stayed in my brain, and I'm very grateful for that. And I, too, had a family doctor that was very much like him. And I think the whole point is it's the friendliness. And, yes, they had more time back then, but when people made house calls, you know, there weren't a lot of doctors, and they had a lot of people to go to, and they had to get there. So it's not that there's so many more people. I think it was a different culture, and it wouldn't hurt us to try to get back to that.
I agree. You have a story talking about denial, minimizing, and embellishing. One of the things that I feel is so important, when you go to a doctor, they are not a mind reader.
Right.
You need to take information to them. You can say, well, I've had this little headache. Look, the doctor has to have information, and that could be past history. I mean, I've gone into a doctor's office, a very fine doctor, and the staff came up to me one day and said, well, you had a hysterectomy so many years ago. I said, no, I haven't. Oh, yes, it is. It's right here in these papers. They had put somebody else's paper in mine. And I said, you've got the wrong information. And so it's so important. And if you don't go in all the time, if you go in like once every 12 years,
right,
that's one thing. If you go in frequently because you have a condition, it's something else. But they are busy. They really are. And staff can make mistakes. All kinds of things can go on. But you have this section on denial, minimizing, and embellishing. And the truth is we just need to tell the truth when we go in.
Exactly. And the way to do that, and I think the reason most people minimize and deny is because they're embarrassed, they feel intimidated. But if you start writing your symptoms as soon as you have them, and people go, oh, that's overkill. Well, okay, wait a couple of days. And I'll give you a recent experience. But if you start writing the symptoms and you keep a diary of what's happening, when, what you ate, how you feel, are you throwing up or sore throat, that kind of thing, and then if you decide you have to go to the doctor and make an appointment, you can distill that information and say, since the 3rd of October I've been feeling ill, or you can just take the diary with you. You've then given the doctor the information to work with.
And that's so very, very important. I loved your story in here about the young unmarried woman who was living across the hall from you when you were a medical student. Tell us her story.
Well, I mean, it was in the slums of San Diego, believe me, because as a medical student I couldn't afford anything, but I didn't know it was in the slums. And it was a house that had been broken into four apartments, and I saw her intermittently. But I had two dogs in this little one-room apartment, and they were big dogs. They were friendly. But I came home one day, and, I came home, and they'd torn the little curtain down in the front of the door. And I thought, gee, what's going on? And I didn't know. And then the next day I went in, I was on the pediatric rotation, and everybody was around this little bassinet. And I said, what's going on? And they said, well, this girl had a baby in her bathtub. And the EMTs had to break down the door and come in, and then she had tied the umbilical cord with a shoestring, and she didn't even know she was pregnant. And just my brain, because I'm very gifted when it comes to things coming to me, I sort of knew that this was this girl, but I went over and looked at the address, and it was her. She told me later that she didn't know she was pregnant, and I think that was denial. And she thought she was having cramps and some gastroenteritis or stomach flu, and that's why she went into the bathroom and therefore the bathtub, and her gastroenteritis or stomach flu turned out to be a baby. And there are people that happens to, but living so close to one is very hard for me to understand.
So where we have that situation, let's talk about insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And how that affects physicians. That has such a profound impact. We have situations today where older patients are not able to get to very many doctors because they won't take patients on Medicare or Medicaid. Various physicians won't. There's just, our healthcare system has changed so much, and the positioning that doctors are in dealing with insurance is a challenge that I think the average layperson doesn't recognize or realize is there. How is that affecting the care by a physician today?
Well, my disclaimer is that thank God I haven't ever worked in the civilian community. Even now I work for the Army, so I haven't had to deal with that. I did go to a conference once where I felt like I was at an AA meeting because the first words out of everybody who spoke mouth was, well, if the insurance company will let me, I would order X, Y, and Z, whether it was a drug or a test or something. And I thought, I am so grateful that I've been in military medicine all my life. But what the patients also have to understand is that the doctor learns three languages. One is the medical speak. They have to learn anatomy and all those fancy terms, and then the physiology and everything that goes along with it. And then the second is the insurance speak. And they do that to help you out, because if they didn't know the ICD-9 codes and all these other things that their insurance companies make them fill out, and yes, they have help, but they have to know the basics. They have to know how to manipulate the system. If they didn't know how to speak that language, you'd be up a greater creek. And then, oh, by the way, the third language is patient speak. And notice that that's third on the list, which indicates where our communication problems are. The insurance thing is they mandate what you can and cannot order, and to a certain degree they mandate the number of patients that you can see, and therefore you end up narrowing it down to the 10 minutes. They also end up mandating, I think, that you can only be seen for one problem at a time. You can't go, oh, by the way. And if you do go, oh, by the way, they tell you to make another appointment. I don't believe that that's the doctor's wishes.
Incredible.
And it's not the doctor's fault. And I know people think, well, we should be able to change it, but we can't. And it's a legal thing. All the lawsuits have added to that, the politicians and everything. And it's not a way to practice. That's why you have so many doctors leaving medicine also.
I had a conversation with someone recently that they had medical professionals that they were keeping company with socially, and a number of them had retired from their positionings and were discouraging their children from going into medicine, and that is not a good thing at all.
No, it isn't, but there's very few positives, and I don't know that I would do it if I had it over again, although that's all I've ever wanted to be since I was 4.
The path of least resistance pills. You have a quote by Voltaire: doctors give drugs of which they know little into bodies of which they know less for diseases of which they know nothing at all. I think of so many people saying, gee, would you repeat that, because that sounds...
Was she talking about my doctor? Right?
And how do we handle that? Because,
well, I think
it's a challenge.
It's a big challenge, but one thing to understand is that we, the patients, have created that problem ourselves.
Okay.
I remember when I was an intern, and a few years even after that, I would try to do the right thing and tell people that, you know, your sore throat most likely wasn't strep throat. It's probably one of the hundreds of viruses that cause that. We need to wait for your throat culture. We didn't have rapid streps back then. No, I need penicillin. I have to have penicillin. I know that I have strep throat. And, you know, as an intern and a first-year doctor, you know, you keep your ideals, and then after that it's like, okay. And then most people want to feel better yesterday, and the only way to do that is through pills. So we've created this. Now that we want out of it, because some of the pills aren't so good and they're bad side effects and some people just don't like that, what we have to do is, I go back to the ground rules. Remember I said, well, how do you want me to interrupt you, because I'm not going to understand things? Tell the doctor up front, I'm into whatever word you want to use, alternative medicine. I really don't like pills because I've had some problems with them. I'm leery of them. If there's some other way that we can treat this, would you look into that for me? Now, what you've done when you've told the doctor that up front is you've given him or her another way to program their mind while they're talking to you, and then when they go out and they're either trying to figure out what they're going to do, they've looked at the results, instead of they come in, you don't say anything up front, they come in, treat you or evaluate you, and then at the end they come back and they give you the prescription. And you go, well, I don't want that. What do you expect them to do at that point?
Mm-hmm.
See, so part of the ground rules is to let them know what your wishes are, what your scenario is. You may not be able to afford all the medicine, and it's okay to tell them that.
You have a number of examples about games that doctors play, and I love the one on charades. because I just finished watching just a short segment on television about aliens.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, this could have been the show. This is just great. I said, gee whiz, people think they've been abducted, and all they've been is in a doctor's office.
And it's the same thing, right?
It's just, you know, it's really, it's hilarious. Your book has so much humor in it, but it's so real. I mean, patients go in, and I can imagine how terrifying it is. I know how it is with children frequently when you take them in for the first time, and they're in this foreign environment, and it's cold, and you're freezing, and you got some little something put around you. In fact, on the cover of your book, you've got a guy with an IV walking with the infamous hospital gown that we all love to hate.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. But that's one of the things I loved about your book. And I loved the candor relative to being in the professional environment of being a physician. And you say doctors should go through the exact kind of physicals that they put their own patients through. How many of them do that?
Probably not very many, because most doctors are healthy when they're young, and it's only as they get older they run across different things, and then they try and circumvent the system. They rarely have to make an appointment and sit through all the stuff that we have to, because they just call their buddies. It's not taught. It's like I think I cited the movie, was it The Doctor, with William Hurt?
Yeah,
where at the end he did make people, his students, go through that. And I think it's really vital. I always would allow the Navy corpsman to practice putting IVs and drawing blood on me for a couple reasons. One is so they could get used to practicing it on someone that they would be nervous around, and also so that I could feel what the patient was going through.
You bring out so many good points of how touching a patient is so important on the part of the doctor.
Yes.
The empathy, the willingness to listen. Again, Marcus Welby is great. I love the how you describe how Marcus Welby would take his little little black bag, put it down in the chair, and I don't think I ever saw Marcus Welby, but I remember hearing the stories about him. And it was just this wonderful, compassionate human being that would talk to you.
Yeah.
Before he would examine you or do anything, wanted to know what was happening. And so many times people are going through traumatic situations. There's a number of conditions of conversation that I've had with different people where just to be able to talk to them, just for someone to even listen to them, where they feel safe about communicating.
Yes.
And we go right back full circle to what you said. It's the communication factor. The art of listening is something that has to be learned, though. What do you think could be done on both the part of the patient as well as the doctor when it comes to listening?
On an immediate term, as opposed to learning ahead of time, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of hard if you're not both on the same sheet of music to do the same thing. But making the ground rules, and I know I sound like I'm repeating myself, but you get everything out that you need to. You bring in a list of your symptoms and a list of your questions, and don't forget your spouse. They always have questions. And you tell them up front, I brought these things. I don't know if you'll want them, and they will, but you got to say it that way. And I brought my list of questions, and I'm going to write things down. Is that okay? And the doctors will be very grateful for that. But then most importantly, the patients have to repeat what the doctor has said so that they understand. And then if they get any indication that the doctor doesn't understand, they've got to say, I'm not sure you heard me right. Maybe it's my accent. Maybe it's where I'm from. But this is what I really said. And, you know, it's like I was talking about your friend. The least offensive you are, and you try and make a joke out of it, it'll incur more of a friendliness nature, and the doctor will pay more attention. But if you're getting any kind of clue, I went to this nurse practitioner last month for something, and she kept going, so you're taking you're eating a lot of Tums, huh? I said, no, it's Rolaids. She said that four times, that I was using a lot of Tums. I said, no, it's Rolaids. And I mean, and I'm a doctor, and I still wasn't able to get the point across to a nurse practitioner. So it takes a lot of practicing, and you have to continue to work with it. The doctors have to repeat what the patient says. It helps if they look at the patient instead of at the computer. and they've got to figure out, and this is one of the hardest things to do, how to cut through the chitter-chatter and get to the real symptoms. And that's very hard because most people want to just talk and chat, and the doctor doesn't have time for that. The patient understands it. The other thing they can do is say, what can I do to make it easier for you?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your friend there with the doctor's response, I think you should tell everybody in the world that 100 times, what happened with that event in a short, tiny period of time.
Mm-hmm. And what evolved out of it is that there was such a good communication afterwards.
Yeah.
Because my friend said, look, I'm here. Pay attention.
Right.
I'm serious. This is my life. This is my body.
Well, I think everybody's got to realize that they wouldn't go through that humiliation, embarrassment, wearing the gown, getting things poked up every opening in your body unless you weren't kind of serious about it. And doctors have to be objective and pulled away, or, and this happened to me early on, you get torn up by every kind of major problem in a patient's life. And you want them to be objective because if they're emotionally involved, they might miss something. So you have to kind of educate your own doctor, which your friend did.
Yes, and it just made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and
it
I'm so happy to hear that.
You have so many wonderful stories in here, and one of them that I want to mention was how doctors sometimes are afraid to ask questions of patients. They don't
mm-hmm.
want to embarrass them, or they themselves are embarrassed. After all, you're human beings, for goodness sake.
Right.
And we need to remember that. And depending on the maturation of the physician, they may or may be more comfortable, but sometimes not. Just, you know, it depends on the personality. Mm-hmm. But you're talking here about a group of medical people that would go into Mexico once a month to take care of people that came from hundreds of miles away to get medical care. But there was something that was really positive with this group. They had a fabulous translator.
Yes.
And before the doctor even went into the patient, this woman was communicating with the patients in Spanish. And this was just amazing to me. No matter what the patient said, what was wrong with them, the women begged the translator to get the doctor to prescribe birth control pills.
Yep.
Why?
Because they... That's against your religion. In, I guess they were all Catholics in Mexico. And so if their husband knew they were taking birth control pills, he'd kill them. But if it was a pill that was prescribed by the doctor, they, of course, didn't say it's a birth control pill, but the doctor told me I have to take this, then it was okay. These people, they had no money, they had no food, and they had 8 or 10 kids running around. And, I mean, I was so grateful that I had the translator like that because she was able to fill me in on many of these things. But that was that they couldn't, you know, tell their husband that they really didn't need to have any more kids.
And the pharmacy then packaged the pills so that they didn't look like birth control pills, so that
right.
the women could have birth control. And like you said, they have 8 to 10 kids running around. They don't want any more because they're starving. All kinds of stuff is going on. What ingenious thinking and what thoughtfulness on the part of the physicians to try to take care of the needs of their patients because of the cultural situation that they were in. It's an incredible story. Dr. Wurzbacher, do you have a website that people can go to? Your book is marvelous. It is a must-read. It will make you laugh when you're reading it. It will make you very thoughtful and make you more appreciative of your doctor as well as respecting yourself as a patient. Dr. Wurzbacher, what is the website they can go to?
Well, they can order the book on Amazon, and you can just search for Your Doctor Said What. There's two websites. One is the publisher's, and that's the kind of static. It's called www.yourdoctorsaidwhat.com. And then the one that I update more frequently and put more articles and information on is my blog, actually, which is www.yourdoctorsaidwhatblog.com. And that's the one that changes. I haven't updated it in a few weeks, but it changes, and I take articles from the news. But if you wanted to buy the book, you go to Amazon. If you want to laugh with some of the other stuff, go to those two websites.
All right. And again, your blog, which is up to date and more current, is yourdoctorsaidwhat.com.
No, it's yourdoctorsaidwhatblog.com.
Said what blog. Thank you. Whatblog.com. Well, this has been absolutely marvelous. Thank you, Dr. Terry Wurzbacher, for being my guest today. You have done something that I think has been long overdue, and, boy, take it to all your medical conferences and everywhere. It is needed. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now. More good things to share.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I want to mention Dr. Wurzbacher's blog again, and her last name is spelled Wurzbacher, and believe me, her book is worth having because it is so insightful. She is just absolutely wonderful, and I love her humor. Her blog is yourdoctorsaidwhatblog.com. Yourdoctorsaidwhatblog.com. I've got to share this thought that she put in a book by Red Fox, who was a comedian. Health nuts are going to feel stupid someday, lying in hospitals, dying of nothing. Yes, I couldn't pass that one up. Anyway, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, and I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to. Toll free, 877-876-5227 in the U.S. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. I wanted to let you know, tomorrow we're going to have a Best of Donna because I'm en route to New York City. Yes, I'm going to be doing an appearance there. And so consequently, we're going to be doing a Best of Donna. And also on Friday, we're going to be talking about apples are square. Yes, Susan and Tom Grzmarski are going to be my guests, and it's appropriate. I'm going to be in the Big Apple, so we're going to be talking about square apples, and you'll have to tune in to find out what that is all about. And next week, my goodness, we've got so many good things coming up. We're going to be talking about spooks on Monday. We're going to be talking about some Seattle ghosts. And then on Tuesday, we'll be talking about how you can use your stress to fuel your success. Isn't that an awesome title? Using your stress to fuel your success. Pete Siegel is going to be my guest. And then, of course, we're going to be talking about Halloween stories and all kinds of good things. So that's what's coming up, folks, and I'm looking forward to doing it. I'm looking forward to being in New York. And if you need to reach me, if you want to set up some time to meet with me privately, call 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. That's my office number. I know we've got a caller on the line. Let's go to a caller, show you how it's done. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is Jean from South Dakota.
Hi, Jean. Where in South Dakota?
Where in South Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
Sioux Falls.
Sioux Falls. Ooh, is it starting to get a little cool back there?
Actually, it's been really nice. Of course, I'm sure it will change by the end of the month or the beginning of next month, but it's been really nice lately.
I've never had the opportunity to be in South Dakota. One of these days, I'm going to get there.
You should go see the Black Hills. They're beautiful.
Oh, that's what I understand. We have so many beautiful places in this country. Absolutely awesome places to visit.
We have a lot of wide open spaces.
Yes, I understand you do. All right, let's get down to business, Jean. The first thing I'm looking at is business. The word business is popping up in my head, and I watch you with a great deal of interest because I feel that you as an individual are going through so many evaluations right now. You are stripping away the fluff, and you are saying, I want to make sure, number one, that I have the money management that I desire. Number two, that I'm able to invest in some equipment that I need. This could be software. It could be computer-related, any number of things. And three, I want to put together a team that will enable me to achieve what I want to achieve in business. And I want to say congratulations. I think your thinking is right on track. You're doing a very good job. You are correct in making an evaluation for yourself about what needs to be done. You are correct in looking at all of the small details as well as the bigger vision. You will find that probably by this time next year, you're going to feel very comfortable within a new environment for yourself that is going to support the change for business as you would like it to be. The home-based business is going to serve you well, and I do think you must remember to have a backup plan should there be any kind of equipment failure of any type. And this is something that's going to mean a lot to you. There is a saying goodbye to someone that is going to happen, I believe, this year. My timing could be wrong, but it's a friend that when you get news about them, when you see them, because you're quite intuitive, you realize that they are in a terminal state, and the time you spend with them needs to be one of a joyful experience. But you are very much going to be aware that this person may not be around a year from now. So you don't have a chance to interact with them frequently, but when you do have that opportunity, you're going to be very much aware that you want it to be pleasant, you want it to be positive, and you want it to be fun.
Okay.
And this is very, very good. You are a person that I think would make a very good counselor. The reason being is you have this way of listening and listening with a clarity without putting in your own, your own biases. You're willing to do this. You had some pretty heavy lessons that taught you how to do this.
Yes.
And this has served you very well, and you can count yourself blessed because of being such a good listener and listening with open ears, not with pre-programmed attitudes or opinions. You actually, when they start coming into your mind, you just sort of shove them out with a mental eraser and say, I've got to hear what this person is saying. It makes a difference. Are you a counselor?
Am I what?
Are you a counselor?
No. But I do take care of my daughter. She was hit by a drunk driver 5 years ago, and she's had a lot of surgeries. I take care of her and my grandson during the day. And then I also sell real estate.
No wonder you're a good listener.
Yes.
It pays. What's your question for me today, Jean?
My question is, my husband was trying for a management job at his work, and I just wondered if you see him getting it.
I think it's up in the air. There are two other persons that they're evaluating. One of them, in fact, is from out of state. So I don't know that your husband is going to get that particular positioning, but I'm seeing another one that may be evolving within a year to a year and a half.
Okay.
So there is a change within the company, and it may well be that there's going to be an early retirement on the part of someone. So I would say to your husband, don't sit on pins and needles about this one position. Let things flow and go about whatever supportive training he may feel he needs to continually hone his skills for leadership. And that could be building his library, you know, just anything and everything. He just needs to make it okay. I wouldn't make this the absolute, gee whiz, if I don't get it, I feel terrible things. Don't go into that scenario at all.
So he should look for different avenues instead of this company?
No, I think this company is going to have another opportunity.
At this company, okay.
Yes. So I would say he needs to continue to hone his skills.
Okay.
And if he does that, then I think he's going to find himself in a positioning of leadership that he will really, really enjoy. In the meantime, the company really is pleased with what he has done. They're not displeased at all. And all he would need to do, I think, is talk to some of the people that are in positions higher than his, asking them what they would recommend that he do to refine his skills.
That's what I was thinking, too. Okay.
And if he does that, and they're supportive of additional education, I think he's in a win-win situation.
Good, good. The person you said that is terminal, is that male or female?
I think it's a female.
Female, okay.
I think it's a female, but it's not going to be right away.
Okay.
It's something I believe, again, you're going to be around this individual and you're just going to know. No one is going to say to you, gee, this person has a terminal condition. You are going to see it.
You don't see it as my daughter, do you?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, but you will see. You will see the situation. And it's fascinating how that will happen, how you can. I know it's happened with me and some people I've been around, and I'll just know they're not going to be around after a period of time, and sure enough, they pass away. I think people give off that kind of, what do I want to say, information.
Yes.
Or energy. It's something you're able to read.
Yes. Okay.
Like you can read a book. But you're a very talented woman, and if you've not ever considered becoming a counselor, I would strongly encourage you to consider that. If ever you choose to go back to school, because you are someone that I think would be a blessing in any environment where people need good listeners.
Okay, great. Great. Well, thank you very much, and I love your show. I listen every day.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. When did you learn about the show?
Oh, I've been listening to BBS for a long time, and yours is one I always like to, when I get home, turn it on and listen to.
Oh, thank you. That's a wonderful compliment.
Well, thank you.
I so appreciate your being there.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. Now, here is the toll-free number, and if you want to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to do exactly that. Remember, I'm an information resource. No more and no less. Here's the toll-free number, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. And don't forget, tomorrow we're going to have the best of Donna because I'm flying. Haven't figured out how to do a show from the air yet. We'll figure that one out eventually. And then Friday we'll be back on live, and I'll be live from the Big Apple, New York City. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Ooh, have I got a recipe for you. Fall is a time, at least here in the Northwest, where it's cool and windy like today. What do you want? You want that feel-good kind of food. How about ravioli with creamy gorgonzola sauce? Does it have you salivating a little bit? You just wait. When we come back, I'm going to share that recipe with you. Good for cold, cold weather evenings. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Don't forget now, if you want to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here are the telephone numbers. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Okay, you got that pad of paper and pen handy. Here's a ravioli with creamy gorgonzola sauce. Just saying it makes you go, I can almost taste it. Now, you can substitute a cheese if you want, but let's just go with this recipe because it's good. So, here we go. You need a package, 26 ounces of cheese ravioli. That's what you need. And I know we've got a caller on the line, but caller, just hold it because I'll be with you as soon as possible. I want to give out the ingredients, and then I'll take the caller, and then we'll do the process of how you fix this recipe. One package, 26 ounces of cheese ravioli. You're going to need 5 cups of broccoli florets. 5 cups of broccoli florets. And you can get those already done up. 1/4 cup of pine nuts. 1/4 cup of pine nuts. 1 shallot chopped. 1 shallot chopped. 1 cup of heavy cream. 1 cup of heavy cream, and you need 1 teaspoon of chopped fresh or 1/4 teaspoon of dried thyme. 1 teaspoon fresh or 1/4 teaspoon dried thyme. 1/2 teaspoon of pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of pepper, 4 ounces of gorgonzola cheese, and you need to crumble that up. 4 ounces of gorgonzola cheese crumbled. 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese. And you need about, 8 ounces of cherry tomatoes. You want to cut them in half. And that comes up about to 1.5 cups. Okay, now you've got the ingredients, and I'll take this caller, and then after the caller, I'll tell you how you put this wonderfully scrumptious recipe together. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Yes, I'm calling from Miami, Florida. My name is Myra.
Myra, welcome to the show. And, Myra, what I want to say, and this is, you said you're in Miami, Florida?
Yes, Miami, Florida.
Wonderful. Myra, the first thing that is coming into my mind is be patient with the experiences of the past because they do not necessarily apply to the changes that are coming about in your life at this time. You are in a very unique circumstance, Myra, because you feel like you're being torn between old and new. And this, to me, in my mind, has more to do with belief systems. And there are certain belief systems that worked for you well in the past that are not working for you now. There's time for change. You need to allow yourself the opportunity to evaluate, to look at what is working and what is not working, and make choices based on what is right for you now, not what you went through in the past. Sometimes this is going to cause you a lot of anxiousness because you're going to be concerned about people being disappointed in you. The truth is, you're the one that must live with the choice. You make up your mind based on right information that you are experiencing now, and also looking at the results that you want. You know, let's say, and this is going to be sort of a silly example, let's say you always had been told that you should never have water with a meal.
Right.
And so you go, well, you know, Mama told me that I would never have water with a meal because it inhibits the digestion. Well, maybe you're in a situation where you've dehydrated so badly, you need to have a lot of liquid. So you drink a lot of water. And so this is a change in the belief system. And a part of you might say, ooh, Mama said no water during a meal. But you're dehydrated, so you need the water. You see my point? I know it's sort of a silly example, but it's the best one that comes to my mind at the moment. So I want you to be aware that you're making corrections and adaptations in your belief system because what may have been okay in the past is not applicable today. And you need to be at peace with that. And that someone may be upset with you, that's their problem. If it works for you, that's what counts. But you have to think it through. I can remember years ago someone saying, you never, ever leave a job without giving so much notice. And that was in that person's mind as an absolute. But the situation was that I had an opportunity, and this is my experience, where I had an opportunity that was available right then, right there, and I would have been perfectly okay at being able to walk into my employer at the time and saying, I have a fabulous opportunity here that is going to expand my world, and I have to give you, you know, a week's notice. And it would have been okay. But because my belief system wanted the approval, and I wanted to make sure everything was done, quote-unquote, right, then I didn't take advantage of the opportunity. And the truth was it wasn't good or bad. So that was a lesson for me, and I just share that with you. And it's just important sometimes what we have handled in the past doesn't apply to the future. What did you want to ask me today, dear?
Well, I've been changing many jobs, and right now I'm going to be looking for another job. And I do feel like I'm on the spin cycle, you know, like just going from different jobs, but I never get the one that I really feel that I'm supposed to be in. And
well,
I have a lot of dreams like being like a fish out of water.
All right.
And I
Myra, and I'm going to have to interrupt you here, hon, because we don't have a lot of time. What's happening is that you really need to take an honest assessment of what it is you want to do. And in looking at what it is you'd like to be involved with, you must be willing, and I say must because it is a fact, you must be willing to go back to school if necessary.
Right, so I won't really repeat the past, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
you
must be
willing to invest in yourself, dear.
That's very true. That's very true.
Myra, I'm going to have to go, dear.
Okay. Thank you, Donna.
You're more than welcome.
Yes.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I know we're just about out of time, but quickly, I want to tell you how to fix this ravioli with creamy gorgonzola. You ready? You got all the ingredients now. Now, it's real simple. You cook your ravioli according to the directions on the package. And then you put in the broccoli during the last 5 minutes of the cooking time. That's all. Just plop it in there. Then those 5 minutes are up. You drain it, and you want to reserve 1/4 cup of the cooking water. Then what you do, you take a large nonstick skillet, put it over medium-high heat. You want to put your pine nuts in there, and you don't put oil or anything. You just put them in there and let them roast for about 2 to 3 minutes. Now, this you could be doing even while the broccoli is cooking in, you know, with the ravioli. And then you remove the pine nuts from the skillet, and then you take that hot skillet, you coat it with cooking spray, and you put your onions in there right away, your shallots that have been chopped. And they only take a minute or two for them to get sort of soft. You don't want them necessarily browning, but just need to get a little golden. Then you take your cream and your reserved cooking water and your thyme and the pepper. You put it all in that same pan with the shallots, bring it to a boil, reduce back to medium heat, cook 2 to 3 minutes, and you want to stir it. So it just really doesn't stick to the bottom of the pan. You want to just stir it very gently. And then you take your 1/4 cup of gorgonzola that you have, and you just mix it in there, add your nuts. You stir until the sauce is nice and thick. Then add your Parmesan. You cook that for a minute. Toss in the tomatoes at the very last moment. Remember, tomatoes have moisture. Very last moment. Sprinkle with the remaining gorgonzola and pine nuts, and you've got your dish. Of course, you've got to pour the sauce over the ravioli, and then you put your remaining gorgonzola and pine nuts there. Good stuff. Wonderful, wonderful fall meal. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Enjoy. And you know what? Take time to watch the changes in the seasons. Oh, they're just gorgeous. On my way to New York tomorrow, Best of Donna playing. We'll be back with you live from the Big Apple, New York City, on Friday. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.